Ladies and gentlemen, you're listening to the Mac and T Show podcast. Here are your hosts, Brian McKay and T. Davis.
This is the Mac and T Show. This is the Mac and T Show. We talk movies and TV shows, sports and world news, coasting like on a world cruise. Hosted by Brian McKay and T. Davis. Yeah, you can't tame us. We're going to the top, we're becoming famous.
What time is it?
It's time for the Mac and T Show.
What time is it?
I said it's time for the Mac and T Show.
Welcome back to the Mac and T Show podcast. NBA Finals. The Golden State Warriors take a 3-1 lead back home to Oracle in the Bay Area as they play the Cleveland Cavaliers in Game 5 tonight. Big storyline going into Game 5 is the Warriors will be without the services of Draymond Green, who was assessed a flagrant 1 foul for his groin contact to LeBron James in a scuffle in Game 4. That puts him over the limit for flagrant fouls. That gives him his 4th one, which will give him a 1-game suspension. James was also assessed a technical foul for his role in the scuffle. Okay, let me say this. I have seen the incident from multiple angles. A lot of people I'm hearing and watching on TV, a lot of people are saying that his kick to the groin against Steven Adams was worse. I can actually make an argument that the Steven Adams one, even though I am fully, in my mind, believe that it was intentional, I can make an argument to say that that was unintentional, that he was just flailing his leg. I've seen this hit to the groin to LeBron 3 or 4 different angles, and if you watch the slow motion angle from behind James, you can see he literally went up with intent to hit this man in his private sector.
It's a sector now.
I don't know what. Look, I don't know what word I could use on the podcast to get us.
Go ahead. That's y'all thing.
Okay. I've seen that, and yes, there's an argument to be made. LeBron didn't have to walk over that man. He could have gone left, gone right to get back into play. He went over him. He knew what he was doing. I don't care what anybody says. He knew if he riled this man up, he could possibly lose his mind, do something stupid. That's what happened. He's out of Game 5. It isn't going to matter. I don't care.
It's not going to matter.
They could win without him, first of all.
He getting another ring. And they just put Iguodala somebody in line. Like, they got so many moving pieces, it ain't gonna matter.
Right.
And they gonna be at home, and they probably have, he probably get them some good speech, so they'll be super, super motivated. I would say, what is your opinion on this whole, after the fact going in and oh, well, you did do something flagrant.
Oh yeah,
you walk after the fact and be like, "Oh, I saw you on yesterday, speed, and I ain't had time to get to it, but this time, what?"
I'm totally, and as much as I'm not a Reggie Miller fan, I'm totally with him on the fact that the referees in game should have made that call. They should have gone to the monitor and made that call, like they're able to do now. They're able to review things. They should have made that call in the game. It shouldn't have been no 48 hours later. Okay, yeah, we're gonna suspend you because you're over your flagrant foul limit because we give you a flagrant foul on that play.
I mean, that's ridiculous. And I just think that this, I'm with the officials. This throwing us under the bus saying that we made bad calls after the game needs to stop too.
Yeah, that last 2-minute review thing that's ridiculous.
That's foolishness. And it just makes, I would feel bad Like, you come after me and say, oh, yeah, you messed up all in public. Okay, yeah, they gonna miss calls. I've been saying for a while now, they need to put four officials out there.
Right.
One on each corner of the court. You ain't got to run as far, so you shouldn't miss as much because you got four eyes, four quadrants to look at. Depending on what corner you in, you know what quadrant you don't have to. The third person, they got to look underneath the rim and the baseline official, because these guys are getting bigger and bigger. And apparently no athletes want to be officials after their career over. So, because you can't see past these guys. Now, these missed calls like this stuff that's happening with Green, that's just foolishness. But usually, though, you follow the ball. So if they weren't around the action of the play, the trail official might should have called it, but he is probably following and trying to look, get his eyes to the area that he's supposed to look at once he gets to the other side of the court.
Right.
I just think that they either need to go to more officials, paying one more person, their $1 billion industry ain't going to kill them. And maybe they'll miss fewer calls and stop giving. If it's a foul in the first quarter, it needs to be a foul in the fourth quarter. I don't care if you're a superstar and you got your fifth foul. Oh, well, stop fouling.
Right.
I can't. And some people going to be suspicious. And I've been a little bit suspicious myself. Be like, oh, did y'all try to do this to try to make Golden State lose? So that y'all can get one more game on the books.
Right, yeah. A lot of people are saying that if the series was tied 2-2, they'd have probably wouldn't even been no flagrant foul given.
So
yeah,
this is looking more suspicious. Like, are y'all trying to stretch this series out? But I hate to tell you, they're gonna finish them off tonight.
Okay, and I'm glad you brought that up, because the other storyline, as it pertains to the suspension. In the rule book, it states that he cannot be on the premises. He cannot be, you know, nowhere near the game as it's going on. And technically, afterwards is how the rule states. So, if they win tonight, there's a possibility that he
can't even celebrate.
Can't even celebrate, but here's the thing.
I never know that.
Now, if you look in the rule book, it's paragraph D, section 7, dash, ABC. Yeah. It's a $2,000 fine.
Oh, no, he's going to take the fine.
That man liable to be sitting on the bench tonight. Look, waving his $100 bills in the air. Come right, get him. Like, come get him.
Come get your money. It's in my pocket.
$2,000?
I'm not about to miss celebrating with my teammates.
How is it only a $2,000 fine if you want that to be enforced?
Well, I mean, you know, we always look at the people that's making millions and millions of dollars. A lot of these guys can't afford that. So if you're a scrub dude,
and you probably
wouldn't be in that position because you probably ain't played enough. But if you just so happen to be, you might not be able to afford that $2,000.
Yeah, but in the case of Draymond, he's making $173,000 a game, so he's all right.
Yeah, that's just like a $200 fine for him. Yeah. He's just like, oh, yeah, I got that.
So, yeah, it'll be interesting to see, you know, will he come running out there in his jeans and a T-shirt to celebrate? And honestly, he could possibly be named MVP of the finals because, I mean, he leads in every category except scoring right now for his team.
Well, if Curry go for 30-something again, he going to get it. And that's what's
going to
happen.
Yeah, I think if Curry explodes, he could get it. Or Iguodala could repeat as finals MVP. I mean, he's got the highest plus minus of anybody in the finals right now. So
yeah, but they look for that splash stuff. You know, again, if he go for 30-plus, even 28 or whatever, and he just killing it. He'll win it just off two good games, which is fine with me. I mean, I don't really care about all that.
Right.
I just want LeBron them to sit down somewhere because I'm tired of all the crying. And boo-hoo, he said your mama's feet stink. I don't know. I don't know what he said. But people talk trash all the time. Like, I've heard dudes on the court say stuff in pickup games that you – but guess what? At the end of the day, when they could have fought, nobody got into a fight. You know, they might have had the – you know, chest bumping it, and then they called it a day and played the next day, and it was cool.
Right.
So stop crying about he crossed the line with his talk. Just stop.
In other NBA news, as it pertains to your Lakers,
yeah.
Magic Johnson has requested to be taken off the Los Angeles Lakers staff directory as honorary VP. A lot of people are saying this move has to do, and they want to make it more than it really is, probably. They want to make it, you know, he's disgusted with the way the Lakers are, you know, doing things, and maybe that has something to do with it. But I believe the biggest part of this move is he's, like we have spoke about on the podcast before, he's very outspoken on Twitter. And I think it's more of a move to where when he says things like the Lakers ought to go get Kevin Durant and LeBron James next year, this offseason, blah, blah, blah. He doesn't want that to make it look like he's meddling or he's being, you know, he's trying to make that happen illegally, you know, stuff like that by his comments. So, and, well, you know,
first of all, who knew he was an honorary VP? When he sold his right whatever to the team, I thought that was it. Like, who knew that? And who cares?
They just want to have something to write about. Right.
I don't know what y'all gonna do when this finals over tonight.
Yeah, they're gonna be in trouble.
Talking about how LeBron, it was his team. He wanted Kevin Love. In my humble opinion, they should have kept the rookie they had. He would have been better than Kevin with this group, the way they want to run, and what Lou talking about want to go fast. You got Bangles, you got Tristan, you got the Mozgov, whatever his name. You had, I'm going to ask you this. Who is the happiest person out on both teams? Pick one person that's very excited about the way things are falling out.
Cleveland?
Either team.
Anderson Bearshaw, probably.
Exactly. Because he used to be sitting on the other side, and he probably like, whew, I'm so glad they let me go.
I'm going to get my ring.
He probably was like, dang, I can't believe this. I was holding it down when y'all didn't have nobody. I was still giving hustle. Oh, I'm about to get a ring. Oh, Cleveland, thanks.
Right.
I couldn't have done it without you.
Yeah. I think as it pertains to this series, Kyrie played the most selfish, probably half, most definitely the fourth quarter of basketball I've ever seen. And for somebody who, as outspoken as LeBron has been, and, you know, wanting to be this vocal leader, and he just kind of sit there and let it happen. So,
somebody said they think LeBron is hurt, that something is going on in Terry or something, because, shout out to Larry, he was saying that, I didn't see the game, I'll watch it later, that LeBron would get in the paint instead of trying to go up and be the bull in the china shop like he normally would. He would just try to kick it out and was throwing the ball everywhere. Then I had read that he told Kyrie, be special tonight or something. So maybe he wanted him to be selfish. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, it almost looked that way because LeBron, like Larry told you, he was very passive and, you know, looking like he wanted to, you know, be the facilitator and not the aggressive. Like we said last episode of this podcast, we said he needed to be the aggressor, the one to, you know, let all the action go through him.
Well,
and he did not do that. He did it a lot in game 3. Game 4, he did not.
If he stopped worrying about fouls and stuff, you can't control it.
No.
Like, just go ahead and play. Had they called it all year? No. You know this. Go out there and play.
Just to run back to this Magic Johnson thing real quick. Like you said, why is this newsworthy? We don't know.
We don't even. I didn't even know he was a VP. And I love Magic, so I don't know what that is.
Yeah.
Okay, go ahead.
It'll be interesting to see if more comes out of this. I think, you know, this was the media's way of trying to get more out of it. You know, to put it out there initially and let somebody dig and dig and dig. So it'll be interesting to see if he has anything more to say. Or is this a situation where he's fixing to try and be a co-owner of an ownership group of another team in the league.
Could it the be Lakers. He needs to buy them. I know they ain't selling, but he needs to try to go ahead and buy them.
Yeah, so it's going to be interesting to see where that goes. But that's going to bring us to our first break. On the other side, we'll get into part one of the O.J. Simpson Made in America 30 for 30 documentary. We'll get into that and much more. It's been the Mac and T Show.
What time is it? What time is it?
Welcome back to the Mac and T Show podcast. O.J. Simpson, Made in America. It's the latest 30 for 30 series. It's a five-part documentary. This aired on ABC this past Saturday night, part one. I'll just kind of run down what I have here in my notes. Just give you a bullet point type outline of it. Started off with O.J.'s quote-unquote coming out party at USC, where he had the big game against UCLA in 1967, where he made, you know, the run that everybody talks about at the L.A. Coliseum, just becoming a household name in that game. Then we go backwards in time, and we're shown the racial tension in L.A. during that era. Talks about the Watts riots in August of 65, which were, you know, week-long, just out there in the streets, looking like the Chicago, Illinois area after the Bulls won the championship. Just bottles being thrown and buildings being burned. I mean, it was, you know, it had a lot to do with the police force and, you know, the excessiveness of their tactic at the time, and the community just wasn't having it anymore. During those times, USC was much considered like quote-unquote Hollywood, as would have become of the colleges, more so than San Jose State or UC Berkeley type, which were much more involved activism-wise. So they're kind of starting to paint the picture that he was, O.J., he was, and I hate to keep saying quote-unquote, but you understand what I'm saying when I'm saying that they're starting to paint that picture that he was not necessarily black.
And yeah, because he said he wasn't black, he was O.J.
Right.
He said, that's what he said. He didn't think he was black.
They go on to touch on Muhammad Ali standing up against the Vietnam War that we talked about last week when we were talking about Ali. You know, he denied wanting to be drafted, you know. Talk about that, talk about the fact that a group of African-American athletes, or at the time, they weren't called African-American, they were called Negro athletes. Bill Russell, Jim Brown, Lew Alcindor were a part of a group that all backed Ali, and, you know, in his...
Who is Lew Alcindor? Okay.
Yeah, excuse me. Excuse me. Also known as Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, for anyone who doesn't know. But at the time, that was his. We was Sweet Lou.
Oh, Lord.
Yes. So then they go on to talk about the 1968 Olympic boycott by African American athletes. They interview O.J. about the boycott, and they show the interview on this documentary where he basically said, that's their prerogative. They have their beliefs, and they must follow, you know, those beliefs, and it really has nothing to do with me. Who, now, at the time, O.J. was considered a possible sprinter for the Olympic track team, and he had a chance to be that. So, you know, it was very telling that, you know, you have all these African-American athletes out there boycotting and saying they're not going to do this and not going to do that for their country, when he's right there, you know, could be backing him up, being a high-profile figure that he was, and he didn't necessarily do that. They go on to talk about how O.J. wanted to be judged by his athletic abilities and accomplishments, and not basically be told he needed to be a certain way because he was black. Goes on to touch of the death of Martin Luther King Jr. Then goes into the Tony Smith and John Carlos protest at the Olympics, where they raised their fists on the, you know, the winner's podium. Tied that in to the quote-unquote blind USC cultured people. Showed how blind they were to what was going on in America. Because at the time, they were winning in football. OJ was the Heisman Trophy winner. And that was all that was going on in their world. They weren't concerned with, you know, how everything on the outside of USC was going on at the time. We transition to his rookie year with Buffalo Bills. Right out the gate, he gets endorsements from Chevrolet, RC Cola, the ABC television network, which at the time was unprecedented for African Americans, athletes, or you know, celebrities of any kind. From there, we flash back to his high school days, growing up in a single parent home. Trouble he would get in with him and his friends. We're introduced to his friendship with Al Cowlings, who is most notable for being the one that drove the Bronco during the Bronco chase.
AC.
Yeah, AC. You know who I am, GD. Oh, excuse me, I'm sorry.
Oh my.
So, they go on to, you know, to interview all these people, and they actually show how OJ was a smooth talker. He could talk himself out of any situation, whether it be fights or getting out of punishment at school. The story they tell, one of the stories they tell about how he would get himself out of trouble, the football coach at their high school caught him and AC and a couple other guys shooting dice in the locker room, or in the bathroom. Brings him to the principal's office, drops him off. Principal walks in, and as he's walking in, OJ gets up and starts walking out the door. And the principal asks him, "Mr. Simpson, where are you going?" He said, "Oh, I was just helping coach bring these guys into the office."
That's a mess.
Yes. They go, the doc kind of documentary goes to touch on AC basically idolizing OJ from that. You know, we're all told, or in our minds, we all just assumed that it started at USC.
At USC, right.
Yeah, but he basically was idolizing him from an early age. I mean, they went to high school together,
yeah,
USC.
I didn't know that part.
They played with each other in Buffalo and San Francisco. It was, I mean, that's kind of where part one leaves off. And I liked the fact that it didn't leave off with any kind of cliffhanger. I really liked that part about this because it didn't insult anybody's intelligence. We know there's more to this story. We know it's going to come. The fact that I'm listening to you rattle your paper.
Don't mind me. Go ahead.
The fact that they didn't leave off with any cliffhanger, I thought was a very good way to leave it. Part two will be tomorrow night, Tuesday night. Part three will be on Wednesday. And I think part four and five are Friday and Saturday. So this will be interesting to see where they go in part two, because it really didn't. I mean, they went on his backstory a bunch and didn't really get into. I mean, he's not even married to Nicole Brown, Nicole Brown at this time, so it'll be interesting to see what part two will be about.
Well, I hadn't seen the little documentary thing or whatever, but I know that I read the article where somebody's doing an interview with the director.
Mm-hmm.
And he talked about, like, he didn't do this to talk about the innocence or the guilt of OJ or any of that. He just trying to give you a bigger picture of what was going on with OJ. Because all the other stories really do spend more time on, did he do it, did he not, how bad was the work that the police and all did. but not because nobody. I mean, by now you think we would have known that AC and him went to high school and all that together, but that this is the first time that came out.
Right.
Because I'm tired of, I don't know why this all popped up. Was this some anniversary? Because these all seen and just kind of popped up together.
Well, here's the thing on it. And I was going to say this. I don't understand why they put part one out Saturday night when they could have waited one more day and it would have been the 22nd anniversary. I guess because technically he was proven innocent on the murders, but it would have been the 22nd anniversary of the murder, the day that Nicole Brown and Ron Goldman were murdered. And I felt like that could have been a really good day to put it
some
out there.
Some kind of tie-in or something.
And regardless of whether you think, you know, people think he's innocent or not, that would have been, you know, something that could have tied in to the fact that, you know, we're going to start it on this date. But whatever. I just don't understand why you were one day off of it when you could have just went ahead and waited one more day. Maybe they felt like Sunday night wasn't a good day for television.
I don't know, but I don't even know that I want to watch it. Like, I'm really tired of the story. I mean,
and the other big part of it is he's up for parole in about 6 months. And a lot of people are saying that he's going to get out. And there's a lot more saying that once he gets out, he's actually going to, in some way, confess to the murders.
That man ain't going to confess to no darn murders. I don't even know who would think that.
There's a lot of officers on the inside of the jail that are coming out with this information.
But we see that he's a manipulative person. If he don't walk the trick to trying to tell the principal, talking about, oh, I was just helping the coach bring them down.
Oh, I got another one for you that I didn't even mention. This man stole AC's girl.
Yes, I saw it.
In his face. I mean, literally, in his face. Stole his girl. And
AC was cool with it.
Yeah, just let it happen.
So, you know he a smooth talker.
Yeah. Well,
My position still is he wasn't smart enough to get rid of all that blood and stuff that should have been on him if he committed that murder. I have no doubt that he probably know who did it. I just don't think he was savvy enough. I could be wrong, but this stuff y'all telling me now, he might be that kind of person that come off as a dummy, but really kind of crazy, psycho serial killer crazy.
Yeah, I think that's what part two is. Going off the preview, is that what part two might be about? The fact that, you know, you don't, he's crazier than he seems.
A little more deviant than we would have ever expected. So, yeah. Should be interesting.
Well, that's going to bring us to our next and final break. When we come back, we will talk about the unfortunate tragedy that went on this weekend in the city of Orlando, Florida. We'll get into that on the other side. This has been the Mac and T Show.
What time is it? What time is it?
Welcome back to the Mac and T Show podcast. Hashtag Pray for Orlando was the hashtag movement, the social media movement that started after the city just had a horrible weekend. Starting Friday night after a concert for former Voice participant Christina Grimey. The singer was gunned down as she was meeting with fans. The gunman was subdued by her brother, who was there with her. Grimey, I think she wound up actually dying on the scene. The young lady was 22 years old. Then you fast forward another day to Saturday night, a gunman who professed allegiance to the Islamic State, otherwise known as ISIS, walked in, opened fire, and killed 50 and wounded over 50 more. I think the total was actually 53.
53.
In a Inside Pulse, which is a LGBT themed nightclub in Orlando. President Obama has come out and said that the gunman was filled with hatred, but said the FBI had not reached any definitive conclusions about a motive. There's more details coming out as you and I speak this morning, so it'll be interesting to see what all goes from that. What a just a sad situation, regardless of, you know, the fact that it was anything to do with the LGBT community. It's just a sad situation for everyone involved, and I just feel for all the families and friends of all the victims.
Well, not that there's a worse part. Stuff like this gives people, when Trump says ignorant stuff like not letting Arabs or something in the country, so this kind of stuff make people be like, yeah, he's right. Because, I mean, we can't take one person's action and just throw it on the group, but we do it all the time. We do it with blacks, we do it with whites, we do it with Arabs, we do it all the time.
Right.
But that, I mean, not that you want, it didn't matter what color he was, it was going to be bad for whatever race of people, but I mean, this kind of stuff would just be like, oh, yeah, that's why, you know, Muslim stuff, that part, he probably didn't even, you know, practice no, they religion or anything. He just happened to, actually, he was born in New York. Some part of New York.
So he's born in America.
Yeah, his daddy said something about he saw two gay men kissing, but then I was like, okay, that was two weeks ago or something. And right. I was like, well, how he gonna wait this long? And first of all, what they got to do with him? Did they come on to him? Like, anyway, this just another reason that we gotta get, obviously, the right to bear arms, but you shouldn't be able to have, nobody should have access to no automatic rifles and all that. Like, you ain't deer hunting with that. Like, you ain't nobody got no need to have that, those kind of weapons. Yeah, he could have went in there with, you know, a bunch of magazines with a Glock or whatever, but.
You know, as good as the FBI and all that is about doing this and investigating and knowing all this information about people, this is, so many times you see things like this happen where, like, this guy was a security guard for 10 years with a company that had federal contacts. I mean, just, he has all this experience dealing with, you know, police matters, and all of a sudden he comes out and does all this. I'm just trying to read the notes here as I was going through it. Yeah, I see where the father told several media outlets that it was an anti-gay motivation rather than a religious one.
Yeah, he told him that he saw two men kissing or something. I was like, okay, you said that was 2 weeks ago, 2 days ago, something. Just decided, oh, well, I'm just tired of it. I'm going to get all my weapons, and I'm going to wait till this night, and I'm going to wait for Gay Pride Month or whatever it is. I don't know. It's some celebration they have. I'm going to go down there and shoot up the place.
Well, this attack surpassed the shooting at Virginia Tech in 2007, as now considered the deadliest in our country's history. I don't know. It's stuff like this ever going to stop?
No, and that's why y'all need to pray, people. Pray, and pray again. When you leave the house, you pray, and you thinking when you get back home safely. Because it's crazy out here in these streets. And speaking of, it's crazy out here in these streets. Y'all got to pull up Jennifer Lewis. I think since it's not a real song, then we could probably put it on the end of the podcast for y'all, not worry about some kind of little
copyright.
Yeah, copyright situation. Because hold on, I'm gonna put it up for y'all. Because this is hilarious. And if you got children in the room, I don't like cursing, but Jennifer is cursing in this song, so you're gonna have to head take the children out the room. We're gonna end this on a lighter note, people. Y'all ready? Here we go.
Fucking with me in these streets, ain't children. I don't want nobody fucking with me in these streets. I don't want nobody fucking with me in these streets. Cause ain't nobody got time for that. Ain't nobody got time for that. Ain't nobody got time. Ain't nobody got time for that.
Wow.
Oh my God.
Well, you need to laugh on days when it's stuff, you know, the crazy stuff happens.
Yeah,
You gotta see him, though. You gotta see him singing, because it's hilarious. It is hilarious.
I wasn't ready. Even when you gave the disclaimer that was cussing, I wasn't ready for it.
Yes, you got to be ready for that. I don't want nobody messing with me in these streets. When they told me about it, you got to see it to get the real, because it's hilarious. And by the way, that's Brandy, Jennifer Lewis, and Ross over Amen.
Ah, okay. Yeah.
You know, the two singing sisters, the one was light skin, the other one was brown skin.
Right.
The light skin one. They all three. Look like it's somebody's house just hanging out.
Yeah, that was definitely needed on this morning of just continued sadness in our country.
Ain't nobody got time for that. Okay, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Yeah, and I don't know. I don't know that it'll ever end. Honestly, it probably will get worse. Thank God for Jennifer Lewis.
Yes.
And her comedic timing. But I think that's going to wrap up our show for today. Unless you have anything else.
I'm good. After that, I just have to.
Yes. Well.
After a little bit.
As always, I am one of your co-hosts, Brian McKay, and I am with
Dr. T. Davis.
And this has been the Mac and T Show podcast. Thank you for listening.
This is the Mac and T Show. This is the Mac and T Show. We talk movies and TV shows, sports and world news, coasting like on a world cruise. Hosted by Brian McKay and T Davis. Yeah. You can't tame us. We're going to the top, we're becoming famous.
What time is it?
It's time for the Mac and T Show.
What time is it?
I said it's time for the Mac and T Show.